Hello and welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile Podcast, the podcast where I take incredible people for a 1 mile walk and chat all things Monday motivation. And I want you to do the same. So grab those headphones and move with us. One of the great things about recording these is that I get to introduce you to highly driven people. And today's guest is no different. She's a self-made entrepreneur who can now call herself a dragon. As a part of the hit BBC TV series, it is Sarah Davies. Sarah has become a friend of mine after appearing on Strictly Come Dancing and getting the chance to hang out with her. I love her energy and I'm very excited to catch up with her during a little break in her filming schedule up in Manchester. So, let's go. Sarah Davies, welcome to Monday Mile.
Well, and I should say welcome to my Manchester Trail, because I believe I'm taking you this time.
I'm very excited to be guided through your ends. First of all, how are you?
Absolutely tremendous.
You look extremely
absolutely
fresh.
Tremendous. We are in the middle of filming the new series of Dragon's Den, so you've literally got me between having my hair and makeup done and before I have to look great on set. So this is the time of day when I must say I've got about an hour of looking my best. You've got it.
We've absolutely nailed this. We were going to do this podcast at 5:30 in the morning. That to me sounds like an absurd time. Tell us about these morning jaunts you've been having.
Well, so here's the thing. When we film in the den, it's a pretty intensive filming schedule. So I'm on set for about 7 o'clock on the morning.
Yep.
Hair and makeup, and then the lads, you know, drifting about 9:30. 5 minutes in the chair and we're on set. So the problem is, we don't finish till about 9 o'clock at night.
That's a really, really long day.
It's an intense, well, you've got to think about it. So for the dragons, this is all, I always term it extracurricular. So
casual.
This is like, I've got my day job and this is my little bit of hobby on the side.
Smart bit on the side.
We're going this way. So the challenge for me is, I always like to get up and go running on a morning. You the same. It's my thing. It's the way to kind of start off the day the right way. So the other dragons think I'm crazy because, yes, it's a 9 o'clock finish and then, you know, we go for dinner and then a couple of drinks at dinner and then back to the bar and we don't see each other very often and we've got to put the world to rights.
So you've got all of the socialising going on. You've got business going on in the background. You've got a TV show to film. Plus a 5 a.m.
And then
we'll
get up at 5:30 and go for a run.
So casual. How do you actually juggle it all?
Do you know, I think it's mindset.
Yeah.
I just think, someone once said to me, give a job to a busy person if you want it doing. And I just think, so my life is a constant juggle. I've got the business. I still work full time in Crafters Companion. Then I've got 2 young kids at home. And I really want to be a hands-on mum. We don't have a nanny or anything. You know, we've got fantastic support with the grandparents, but it's just all help.
Yeah.
And then I've got my investment portfolio that we have through Dragon's Den. Then I've got my extracurricular fun, like filming Dragon's Den or when I present Morning Live, or I've got a few other TV bits in the can going through. So literally just trying to fit it all in. It's just got to be like a military schedule, but I want to do it all because I love it. I love being in the business. I love helping my other investments, just everything. This is one of my running routes. So while I've been in Manchester, do you know, I say all this stuff about I'm going to get up and run and all this. However, let me just tell you, at 2 o'clock in the morning when I'm sat having another amaretto sour with Deborah Meaden in the back.
Yeah. Was that last night?
No, last night was only about one. It's so easy to think, I'll just skip tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I know that I could easily do that. So what I have to do is I have to trick myself to not doing it.
Okay.
So the way I found it, I don't know Manchester at all. I'm not from here.
Yeah.
So what I've done is I found a fantastic running coach in Manchester who I've pre-booked and pre-paid to meet me every morning.
That's the key, isn't it? It's actually
paying. I've made that commitment.
For a service, because then you've got to show up.
Well, also, this morning the alarm went off at 5:30 and I just thought, I could really do without it today. But I know that Steve's already on his way here. And then I get up and I'm halfway through my run and I feel brilliant. And I'm thinking, I'm so pleased I did this. Whereas I know from experience, if I don't do it, and especially if I intend to do it and then I don't do it, I spend all day feeling like, oh, I've just started the day on that wrong foot, and it just goes downhill from there.
So talking about routine, Mondays, the start of the week.
Yes.
What's your relationship like with Monday? Does it excite you? Are the weekends off time, or does it never really stop in your world?
Do you know what, I must say, especially while we've been filming Dragons and it's been such an intensive schedule, I feel like I've lived for the weekends at the moment. And for me, I can't do nothing on a weekend, but I just love having for me, it's the time with the family. So like my eldest has started playing cricket. He plays football in the winter, cricket in the summer. He's only 8.
Yeah.
So it's every Sunday morning, the club, you know, opens up and we go down for training and then the matches. There's about 100 families there. And it's just, it's the club where my husband grew up playing and his dad's played there for the last 60 years.
Wow.
And to just, it's where I met my husband. I used to score on for the cricket team. So to just go there on a Sunday morning, and you know, they put bacon butties on, round to the left, we go left and up the canal. But they put bacon butties on and we have a cup of tea and all the parents have a bit chat and all the kids are playing cricket. And I just kind of sit there and think, yeah,
this is
I don't mind
about.
Working really hard all week when this is what I get to do on my weekends.
That's incredible. So that is your balance among the chaos.
Yes.
Your bacon butty down at the cricket.
Yep.
Tell us about your relationship with cricket. And I've not yet had the pleasure of meeting your husband, Simon, yet. But he's your partner in crime.
Partner in crime. So I met Simon when I was 15. So I was 15, Simon was 19. Which, let me tell you, was quite the scandal at school. And I think because I grew up essentially watching the cricket with my dad, and then Simon was the star player for the team back then. So that's how I got to know him. So I remember when I got to uni thinking, well, I know all this about cricket, I might as well play. Well, I'm not a sports person. Let me just tell you, we've tried really, really hard and I beg to differ.
I've seen you dance. Dancing is classified as a sport.
What, do you know what, in that case then, I will withdraw that statement.
Withdraw it right now.
We used to struggle to get 11 together every week, so I always used to make it into the team.
That is strong.
But because everything to me is a business, I can't help but see everything as a business. I remember joining that cricket team and being so passionate about it. But then what I would do is, I ended up becoming president of the club in my second year at uni.
Brilliant. Absolutely
so
brilliant.
Did
you have some sort of badge? Or?
Oh, we had everything.
Oh, yeah, all the merch.
I ran that cricket club
Marketing? Like
a business.
Oh, yeah.
So the first thing, we needed money.
Yeah, right.
So I went out and got a sponsorship, and I remember trying to talk this. It was a big Pakistani cricket brand at the time, telling them that I really talked us up. We were the big I am in cricket. You know,
how did you go about that and have the confidence?
Oh, confidence is never something I've been short of. Fair. I don't mind ringing it. And that's the thing, in business, you've got to be able to pitch anyone.
Big balls.
I'll rock up anywhere, big balls, and hit anyone with anything. So I remember talking this team into sponsoring us. So then we got all the kit, then we looked the business, and then I remember we used to intimidate the other teams because we looked so good because we had all the kit.
Because you had all the stash.
And then I had us going on tours. I remember touring around Scotland and playing all over. And then it became the team where everyone wanted to play, you see. And then I used the money to pay for coaches to come in and give us professional coaching. So we started getting really good.
So you essentially professionalised
the club.
A club that didn't even have enough players.
Yeah. And then...
That is unreal. I feel like so many sports teams and clubs could do with a little Sarah
Davies.
Just
a business. Everything in life, if you look at it like a business, you can succeed at anything. I had 7 of us trained as full-on cricket coaches. We went into the local schools.
So you trained?
I trained. So I am officially a cricket coach.
No way.
Yeah. Which I can tell you, I've got one up on my husband there. And, you know, so now when he tries to show the kids, and I would be like, never mind what your dad says, your mum's the actual official cricket coach. Let me show you how to do it.
Take us back to the start of your career. Mm-hmm. I read your book. I absolutely loved it. And there was one bit that really resonated with me, and it was when you took the big plunge, essentially on the enveloper, and you went all in.
I'm definitely an all-in person, and I'm one of these people that I have bags of confidence and I feel like I can do anything. If I put my mind to it, I genuinely believe I can do anything. So what made me famous in the craft world was this enveloper. So for those that don't really understand, if you're into
totally
making...
I've butchered the pronunciation.
It sounded all right with your London accent.
Yeah?
Yeah, right, I'll take enveloper.
Give us another get.
So enveloper.
Enveloper?
Enveloper, she's on it. So if you're into making handmade cards as a hobby, right, this is perfect because you can now make a perfect matching envelope for your card. And you probably think, well, why would I not just buy an envelope?
Yeah.
But actually, if you're really into card making, you've made a beautiful card, it's like you wouldn't buy someone a present and wrap it up in newspaper.
You'd
want to wrap it up with a nice bow if you're really into it. Same with the envelope. You make a beautiful card, you'll make a lovely matching envelope for it. So anyway, I knew it was the best thing since sliced bread ever. So, took it to the TV shopping channel. And in my head, I was like, they sell all these card making kits. Why not? They could just buy a few of my envelopers. And then after someone's done a card making presentation, I can whiz on, make an envelope. And they've got a good $14.99 upsell, right? It's what we call it in TV shopping, upsell, like add-on sale. Pitched the buyer. She was like, yes, I love it. I'm going to buy 8,000. I was like, hello. I thought she was going to buy 800. 8,000. I was only a student at uni.
Yeah.
So I had no money to buy the 8,000, but it's all right because I get the gift of the gab from my father. So my dad, between the two of us, we did a pincer attack and talked the joiner in our local village into making them for us on credit. And we're like, do you know what? This is a massive deal. This TV shopping channel, they're huge. They're going to pay us in 45 days. We'll cut you the check now. Just don't cash it for 45 days, right?
That's mad.
So made the 8,000 envelopers, got to the week before, needed to go and deliver them. So I rang the warehouse and I said, oh, Sarah Davies here, Crafter's Companion. I've got a delivery of 8,000 envelopers. Can we drop them off tomorrow? And he said, yeah, I just need your purchase order number. And I said, oh, well, I haven't got a purchase order number. If you ring Pam Kershaw, the buyer, she'll give you it. And he was like, no, love, you ring and get the purchase order number and then you ring me back. Well, I'd been trying to ring Pam for a few weeks and she hadn't been taking me calls. I just figured she was busy.
Were you not nervous? Was there not a point in that process?
No, I wasn't worried at all, no. Rang Pam, finally got through to her. She's like, oh, Sarah. Yeah, I've been meaning to speak to her about that. We're not sure. 8,000 is quite right.
She's like, I can't deal.
I'm not sure we'd... You know, it's only envelopes at the end of the day, so we thought we'd only order like 1,500.
Yeah.
I was like, but I've made all 8,000 now, Pam.
No.
And she's like, well, that's not my problem. So she cut me the purchase order for 1,500. So even if we sold all 1,500, I had no way of paying that bill. That the 1,500 would not cover the cost on the 8,000.
And what was the cost on the 8,000?
14 grand.
Okay, and you're still at uni?
Yep.
No way to...
Me car, a little old Vauxhall Tigra at the time. I reckon if I sold that, I might get 5 grand for it at most. That wouldn't really cover it.
So how did you rectify it?
Well, so... Went down on the night. So we talk about not being nervous, and I was nervous that night. And I wasn't nervous about going on telly, because it was like, you know, my first really big show on shopping telly or whatever. It was the fact that I had no way of paying this bill, and I wasn't in control of the situation. You should never in business do anything without your purchase order, and I know that. But I was so keen, so excited, so enthusiastic. Anyway, start at the top of the show and they tell you everything that's coming up, and they mentioned, we've got this new product called the Envelopette, makes envelopes, $14.99, blah, blah, blah. So she, about 7 minutes into the show, the floor manager came over to me, Sarah, can you get ready for the demo? We're coming to you early. I thought, oh, this is a good sign. So I got ready, did my demo, off they went back, and then the floor manager came back over, can you get ready for another demo? We're coming back to you. And I was like, oh. But it's the same envelope. I've just made one. It's the same thing again. They're like, yep, why don't you just do a different size? I think I did about 4 in that hour. And I could see Pam Kershaw waltzing around in the background talking to my husband. Wait, we weren't married back then. He was in signing bits of paper and everything like that. And I came out and I said, Simon, what's going on? Why was Pam talking to you? And he said, oh, we've sold out. I said, brilliant.
No.
Give her the other 6,500. He said, we've sold out. We'd literally sold all 8,000 in that first show. And it was just, it became the product to have that Christmas. Like, if you were a card maker, all anyone talked about in our industry that Christmas was owning an enveloper. we owned that space, and it's kind of, it just launched and parachuted the company. And I remember going, I was out drinking with the lasses over Christmas that year.
I
went to the hole in the wall to get some money out the bank. And actually, my friend had to lend us a tenner because I didn't have any money. So we went to the bank to withdraw some money. And I put the business card in by accident, and it gave us my bank balance. And I remember having $100,000 in the business bank account back then. And she was over my shoulder and she went, "And I had to lend you a bloody tenner." And it was just looking at that $100,000. And I was like, I started this business 3 months ago and I've now got $100,000 in bank account. It took off straight away.
Okay.
And that was the start of Crafters Companion. You know, fast forward 17 years and we now a 40-odd million pound company with stuff all over the world.
That story is incredible. One thing I'm intrigued about is the nerves and how you dealt with it, but also that $100,000. So I think in society, people, if they've got $100,000, the majority of people be like, "Woo, what can I spend it on?" But as a businesswoman, that's $100,000 to invest, multiply.
Oh, I was like, "Woo, what can I spend it on?" But in the business. And we went on this massive growth trajectory from day one, and it kind of hasn't slowed since.
That is incredible. And then you managed to fit in all of the other things you do around that business. So Strictly.
Yes.
Now, most people go on Strictly to build their profile. But for you, it's almost as if it was quite the opposite.
I just wanted to dance. I've just watched that show for years, and it just looks like the most incredible thing. And I was fully aware of all the sacrifices that not only I made, but all of my friends and family had to make to facilitate me being able to do that. How much harder all my staff had to work to make up for me not being in the business 10 hours a day, you know, 5-6 days a week. My husband, who had to juggle running the business with the family, how the in-laws and my parents had to step in and do more. Everybody did that so that I could basically go and live out my dream, which was to get to go and do that. So all these years I would say to my dad, "Oh, Dad, one day I want to do Strictly." And bear in mind, I only did shop and telly. So my friends would laugh at me and say, "You're hardly high profile enough to get to do Strictly. Like, you need to be like A-list celebrity to get on Strictly." And I was like, one day.
Any takeaways from Strictly that you've brought into your life now? Because I heard you quite liked the tanning.
Do you know, you talk about being busy and juggling and everything like that. So my schedule at the moment, you'd think it was a bit crazy with Dragon's Den, was nothing compared to Strictly. So when I was doing Strictly, I had to be up at 5 o'clock every morning. I used to meet Aliash at training at 6. We used to dance from 6 till 12. And then I used to have to go into the office, do a few hours work. When we were up north, I used to want to get back to pick the kids up from school because I wasn't seeing the kids on a weekend because I was at the shows and they were too young to come. So I'd try and pick them up from school. Poor Aliash used to get dragged on the school runs with us. Kids' swimming classes, footy training with us. He just became part of the family.
Isn't that the best way, though, with your partner, is to actually fully immerse, in the experience?
Do you know, it's really clever what he did, because he made sure from day one that he endeared himself to my whole family. Him and my husband became best mates, and they'd watch the football and have a couple of beers on a night. The kids idolised the ground that he walked on. My dad used to come over and watch our dance training, and then he'd go outside and sit and have a cup of coffee with him and chew the cud on how this step was and how I was getting on with that. So my dad loved it. So the whole family just loved the experience, which meant I had even more support from them. It wasn't a case of, you know, I was 4 or 5 weeks in and my husband's like, "Oh, I'm totally ready for you to be out now because I need you back."
Yeah.
The whole family were just wanting to make
keep
it work
going,
and do more and do more. And it, so the whole, and I loved it more because I felt like the whole family were living the experience with us.
Do you ever get burnout?
Do you know, I don't.
No.
I honestly don't.
So that must be your ability to juggle everything. What's the secret? You must have one, because I don't know anybody else that operates at the same frequency you do, with ease and zealous, and you've got a very calm nature about you, but passion and energy at the same time.
I think passion and energy. So my whole life is driven on passion for what I do, whether it's business, which is why when I'm in the den, you know, I get really frustrated if you get an entrepreneur in there and they're a little bit lackluster. I'm like, come on, guys, this is the biggest opportunity of your life. You're pitching to the five biggest entrepreneurs in the country. Plus, on top of that, you're going to be on the bloody telly, so your product's going to get all this exposure. Why are you not excited?
Come on,
why are you not passionate?
Give me something.
I want to put a rocket up your behind. But for me, my whole life works on that, but I think it's a choice.
It is
a choice. It is a choice. And I think it's mindset for me every day, which is why I like to get up and run in the morning. Because if I run in the morning, it puts me in this brilliant mood. And then all I have to do is sustain that brilliant mood for the rest of the day. Whereas if you start the day off on a downer, you're then having to pull yourself out of that before
it's hard,
you can crack.
Isn't it?
It's really hard. Which is why I said, especially if I intend to do it, and I don't do it, then I'm annoyed with myself. So I have to undo all of that before I can start getting the right frame of mind.
But
I just think if you choose to be positive.
Movement in the morning for you is the key.
Yes.
That is a solid part of your routine.
100%.
You flow on that energy.
You flow, and people say, oh, but I'm not a morning person. I'm not a morning person. There is nothing I love more than having a nice long lie-in on a weekend. I love it. I don't want to be a morning person, but my schedule dictates. I mean, I'm so exhausted on a night. I couldn't do any exercise on a night. I'd be knackered.
But also, I think the evenings, you kind of want to enjoy them as well. Because you've worked in the day, and it's like, okay, cool. You can have a nightcap. You can have a nice meal and actually wind down.
I like to put my pyjamas on and get into bed with the kids.
Aww.
So the kids, and sometimes I fall asleep with them or whatever, and then my cousin will come wake us up. So I like that bit of time with the kids.
Yeah.
And then I'll come back downstairs, like you say, a cheeky little glass of wine, stick a movie on with my husband, or we'll be watching a box set or whatever it is. But I just live for that family time and home time and reflecting on the day and everything like that. I kind of be doing with being busy and about and having to go here then off to the gym and then being sweaty and having to come back and have a shower and whatever. So,
yeah, it's just an extra layer of stress.
Get it out the way on the morning.
Boom.
All done by 7. Brilliant.
All set.
Yeah.
So you've got to be one of the most driven people I've ever come across. I've heard you speak about passion, but also you've mentioned the word drive. What does drive mean to you?
So I would say I have drive in everything that I do. So I can't give anything as much of my time as I would like in an ideal situation.
Yeah.
So I just want to make sure I do the best of it I can. And I do that by being driven. So, like, I know in the business, especially if I'm working dragons at the moment, I can only give it a couple of hours a day, but I've got that drive to make sure that in that time, the business gets the best out of me. I want to be the best mum I can be. So, yes, I'm away from home a few days a week, and so I'm not with the kids as much as I want, but I'm so driven to make sure that the rest of that time is really valuable. And it's also, I think, within business, and this is where it comes from, it's the drive to succeed. So a lot of people think business or business people or entrepreneurs, we're all, oh, it's about making money.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's not really. It's just the way that people measure success. The only way you've got an even keel of measuring success across the board is money, is profitability or whatever. Oh, there's a trip.
Oh.
We really are under this. Is
under
where
the
Peaky Blinders, by the way.
Is it? There you go. Proper little tour of Manchester. That's the train just passing. We're out of the other end.
But yes, it's that huge drive to succeed. And for me, it was that I always wanted to be the best at whatever I was doing. So I remember when I started the business, there was like another company in our industry who I looked up to, and I was like, one day I want to be as big as what they are. And it was that drive that kept me going. And then as soon as we got there, well, before we got there, I'm like, what's the next thing? What's the next bit I'm wanting to drive?
So always looking past and not just being content.
It's the same with the dancing. I was never, ever going to be good enough to be, you know, in this finals. I was not that calibre. It was not, you know, you look at the people, they're almost, in a way, you know, some of the people who were in this year's show could go on to be professional dancers now. I mean, they were just
the
incredible.
Standard was
the standard was so high. But I really desperately wanted
you
to do well
though.
At this.
You could see your level of progression from like week 2 onwards. It was like a switch, and you were like a different person?
Driven.
The drive?
It was just the drive.
Did you go from gear two to a quick four? Block change? You did a block change?
Do you know what used to be really interesting though? I can remember, so because we'd start at 6 o'clock in the morning, I'd be really uber focused. And Ali, I remember him saying to us, I've never known anyone so focused and so able to absorb the information. And he said, you know, he could get more out of training with me for 6 hours a day than he's been able to do with some people training 12, 14 hours a day. And it's just that focus and the drive on what we're doing. However, I kind of almost learned it the hard way, because what I used to do is 6 o'clock till 8 o'clock, really focused.
Yep.
8 o'clock, we'd knock off, have a cup of coffee, 15 minutes. So I'd get my phone out and check my emails.
Oh, that opens a mental can of distraction.
That is exactly what it would do. And the thing is, when I was driving on the morning, I would send a ton of voice notes to loads of my staff. Need you to get on with this today. Don't forget about this. Need an update on that. So at 8 o'clock, I'd start getting all the replies back in. And then my watch would be pinging. And so we'd be back on about 8:15, starting to do a bit more. But really, I'm only giving him half my focus, because now I'm thinking, when I get to the office, I need to do this, and so-and-so sort about that. And I remember him saying to us, you're never as good after 8 o'clock as you are in the morning, and I don't know what it is. And it dawned on me what it was.
Did you tell him?
And so I had to start, I never told him. But I had to stop looking at my phone at 8 o'clock, and I just thought, you know what? I'm not going to do anything different that day before 12 o'clock. It's not, it's prepping me up for 12 o'clock, so don't look at it.
Total undistracted focus. I feel like when you can condense a period of work and you hyper-focus your attention on something, I absolutely love that. It's the ability to just zone in and get the job done. Whereas if you let little things, I think even when you work at home sometimes and it's like, I'll just put the washing on, or I'll just hang the washing up, or there's something on the floor, I have a little hoover.
Yep.
Whereas if you're like, I'm not doing anything other than attuning myself to
this,
boom, done. And the productivity goes through the roof. Would you say you've taken elements of that learning in Strictly into the business?
Absolutely.
Into Dragon's Den? We've got to talk about Dragon's Den as well, as we're about to rock up to the studio.
We're about to rock up to the studio.
No biggie. So the minute that door flings up, is that honestly the first time you see the product?
And so what happens is, we all go into set and sit in our chairs, but they have to do what's called final checks on the set. So they have to check our makeup and everything when we're on the set. So what they do is they put screens up. The products will be set up, but there's black screens up, so we can't see anything. And once we're all set, the floor manager will give us the all clear, and they'll reveal the screens, and you get our instant reaction to, what do we think of what we're seeing? And then 20 seconds later, the lift doors open, and the entrepreneur walks through. And we know nothing, we've seen nothing. People sometimes say, have you seen the due diligence packet? Not a sausage. And we're not allowed our phones or anything. So if you say, an entrepreneur says, there is nothing else like this out there, we have no way of checking. We have to just take their word.
That is such a
But the BBC have done due diligence.
Right.
But then what happens is, so if you do a deal with someone, this is why they need to be honest in the den. Because the first thing that happens is we get sent the over-the-shoulder camera recording.
Yeah.
So all the claims they've made in the den, we're able to then verify.
Okay.
And so if it's not what you say it is, we're within our right to pull out. And that's happened before. So what I've found is, you end up with people who, they know that they're going to be checked on it all. So when we'll go to them, what was your gross profit last year? And they'll say, because they've learned the numbers. It was 62,500. And then I might say, out of that, how much of that was from your direct to consumer? And if they don't know the number, they'll be like, because you know they're about to go and bullshit something, and then they think, we can't.
Do you get many people come on that do try and spin you a yarn?
Oh, they're sniffing a mile off.
Really?
Oh, yeah, and do you know
God,
what?
I love them. I bet that's quite fun, is it?
I'm digging because I'm going to catch you around. And quite often you can catch them out in there. And then I'll just say to them, you should know better than to come try and bullshit the dragons.
What's the best thing about being a dragon?
So, here's the thing, right? Having a business, the best way I can describe it is like having a baby, right?
Yeah.
So I've got my business, my own baby, I've nurtured it, grown it through, it's gone through its teenage years, it's now blossoming into an adult, right? My sister had a baby, Love it. Love being an auntie because I get to do all the nice cuddles and everything, but then I can give it back to her when it's crying and not sleeping all night.
Oh, I like this. This is a great and so explanation.
Investing in other businesses is like being an auntie because it's not your business. So I can add all the benefit of my experience, my learnings, everything like that, but it's not my problem. I'm there to help and assist them, give them the benefit of my learning, but it's their business to run. And every baby's different, just like every business is different, but they've all got the same fundamental building blocks. And it's that's the best way I can like to describe it to someone who's not a business person. That's the best way to understand it. And so I absolutely love investing in other businesses because all the mistakes I've made and the learnings I've had from that, they can benefit from my experience. But then also I learn so much from them. So literally every day in the den, I'm learning so much from the other dragons, from the entrepreneurs that come in. The personal development I've had from sitting in that chair the last 4 years has just been immense.
Do you look for qualities in the entrepreneurs that you maybe don't have so you can learn from them?
Oh, that's a good point. I'll tell you what I am looking for in abundance. You'll not be surprised to hear it, drive. Drive, passion and energy. Because the thing is, and I learned this, so my first series, I just did investments where I thought the products were great as well. And my priority, yes, I invested in great entrepreneurs, but I also did some where I just thought was a great product. And the problem is, I've got to invest me in them. Because here's the thing, right? My money is not the thing that's in short supply, it's my time and my energy.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to give you a bit of my energy, I need to get something back in me. I need to top my own energy levels up from it.
You don't want a sucker.
No. And it's like in life, I've had to kind of over the years just, you know, pull out those friends who are the ones, you know what, you know exactly who they are, who just, you like spending time with them, but they suck the energy out of you. I've learned to surround myself with people who actually fill up my tank a bit more and fill me with energy.
Yes.
But you can tell I'm not taking energy at their expense.
No.
They're also taking energy from me.
It's an energy exchange.
Yeah. So it's the same with the entrepreneurs. It has to be someone where I think I'm going to love working with you because you're going to really embrace this experience. You're going to learn loads from me. I'm going to love teaching you it, and I'm going to be happy giving you a bit of a part of me, and your business is going to be better as a result of it.
So would you say, in general, as a dragon, you're looking more for personality qualities than the concepts themselves?
Yes, because here's the thing, right? A fantastic entrepreneur can carry a mediocre product. But a mediocre entrepreneur couldn't carry the best product in the world. There are so many products that people design, invent, develop, that either never make it to market or they launch the business and it fails. It's because they haven't got what it takes. And so, but then I also see some phenomenal business people. You look at the product and you think, well, it's all right.
Yeah.
But it's hardly mass market or it's not earth shattering. But they are just incredible. Being an entrepreneur, running your own business, it's not a job, it's a way of life. Are you prepared to embrace that way of life? And if so, that's the first tick in the box. Then the next one is, am I going to enjoy working with you? And do I think you'll learn from me? Or is it going to be a rub? We'll get a tick in there. Then I'm looking at, is this product actually the real I am? Is it decent enough?
Is it legit?
And there are some businesses I've invested in where I've thought, you know what? The product's all right, but you are going to make a huge success of it.
Oh, I love that. That is so cool. The qualities rather than the product. Okay, and lastly, Sarah, I've got to ask you, have you got a life motto that you live by that you can share with our listeners? A little takeaway.
So the thing I would say that I learned in my early 30s is that I am good enough. So all the way through my 20s, I remember I would go to like a big business meeting or a pitch, or I was on the board of directors for a big association in America. And I used to sit there and try and read the room. I would power dress because I thought that's how I had to look to be there. And then I would try and read the room and I'd think, right, how's everyone else behaving? How do I think I need to behave to fit in here? Because they expect me to be a certain way, so I'm going to behave that way. And my husband used to laugh at me because he said, you wear so many hats. Like, which Sarah's turning up today? And I thought that was a great thing, that I could literally morph into any person to fit the situation so that I could be exactly what they needed. And it wasn't until a few years ago and I thought, you know what? It's not about being what they need, it's about being me, and either they want me or they don't. And do you know how I learned it? It was doing Dragon's Den. So when I interviewed for Dragon's Den, I did my first couple of rounds of like Skype interviews, and then I had to come down for the screen test. And the executive producer said to me, she said, "We think you're great. We think you could be brilliant for the show. However, you're just a bit nice." Ooh. And the show's called Dragon's Den. So we think if you tone down the niceness and get a bit more dragon-y, you would be perfect. And the old Sarah would have been anything she needed me to be to get that opportunity. Yeah. And that was arguably the biggest opportunity in my life, getting to be a dragon, right? And I really chewed on it and I thought, do you know what? I could be anything. To do that interview, I could be absolutely anything. Job interview, you turn on the charm. But then I'm going to have to live by that and be that every day that I sit in that chair. And it's just not me. That's not who I am. I am a nice person. I'm not that quite stoic dragon.
I've never seen that ever.
And so I kind of took a bit of a gamble and I thought, I'm just going to be myself. And either myself is good enough and it's right for this job, or it's not. And if it's not, then that job, Dragon's Den, is not right for me, and I need to accept that, because I can't go through my life being other things for other people. I'll only be truly happy if I am who I want to be. And I did it, and I thought, and then they left me hanging for months.
Oh, no.
Months. And finally, they confirmed it a week before we were due to film. They're like, yep, you've got the job.
No, wait, a week and before?
A week before.
Under the pump.
I stuck with my guns. And I think from then on, I've always just thought, right, I'm going to be me. And even little things like the way I dress in the den. You know, I look at the other dragons who've sat in them chairs before me with their power suits and all this. I wore a spotty dress in my first year.
Go on.
I wore a £79 bright pink Zara suit last year. And that is me.
Excuse me, what's wrong with a £79 bright Zara suit?
I rocked. That's £79. And you know, I remember Peter Jones, you know, they're used to people wearing dresses and jackets that are thousands of pounds or whatever. He's like, you look really good in that suit. And I was like, ta, £79 from Zara. You know, I was so pleased with me. And I just thought, that is me. I have not compromised on who I am. And do you know what the best thing is? The reception I've had, people love me on the show for being me and being real.
Unapologetically me.
So big learning, try and learn as early as you can in life. Be you, because you is good enough. And if it's not, then I tell you what, whatever the situation, the opportunity, whatever it is, not good enough for you either.
That is so too true. I absolutely love that. And I've definitely taken something from that.
Nice.
There's lots of boxes that people try to put you in or think you should sit in. But at the end of the day, if you yourself, it's either meant to be or it's not.
Yep.
Sarah Davies, Monday Mile listeners, that is a wrap. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a nice mile or two.
I feel like we've definitely like boshed out at least 2 miles. That was a strong 40-minute walk. That's at least 2 miles.
We've done well, right?
And how many this morning?
5K this morning.
So did 3, a shorter 5, one. Boom. The steps are flying. Oh. I really hope that everybody that's tuned in and listened to this podcast has something to take away from that, because I know I certainly do. So if you are new to the podcast, do make sure, please subscribe. Monday Mile, we're across all podcast platforms and we drop every single Monday for the next 8 weeks. It's a wrap.